苏若露若来，苏若露若露若 Hush, now don't you cry， 苏若露若露若，苏若露
Welcome to Library on the Go. We bring stories and adventures to you. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Ms. Barbara.
Of the Cortez Public Library. And today Ms. Barbara has two stories for you.
Our first story is Thumbelina, written by Hans Christian Andersen, adapted by Tom Roberts, illustrated by David Johnson, published by Rabbit Ears Books. Quite a long time ago, there lived in Denmark a couple who worked very hard, yet still were quite poor. But more than money, more than anything, they wanted a child. When that didn't come to be, the wife went to see the witch down the road to ask for her help. The witch said to her, "I have a present for you, barley, a special grain of barley. Plant this, and we shall see about your wish." The witch smiled and returned to her garden of weeds. The wife hurried home and planted the grain, and while the soil was still on her hands, there sprang up a large, most unusual flower. The wife looked and looked again. There in the middle of the flower sat a tiny, radiantly beautiful girl, no bigger than the wife's thumb. "I shall call her Elena." And she did, but everybody else called her Thumbelina. The wife shaped a walnut shell into a cradle for Thumbelina, and she plucked a rose petal for a blanket. People came from several towns away to see this remarkable little girl. One night, while Thumbelina slept, a big, slimy old toad hopped through a broken window pane and landed right next to her. "Brrrr! What a pretty little girl, who would be a fine wife for my son." And with that, the old toad lifted the shell cradle and hopped back through the broken window pane. At the old toad's dank home, her eyesore of a son, even more grotesque than his mother, stared in wonder at the sleeping Thumbelina. "She shall make you a fine wife." "Brrrr!" crowed the young toad, his slimy skin glistening in the moonlight. When morning came, Thumbelina woke and looked around for her mother. "Thumbelina was puzzled. What has happened to my old home?" "You shall be my son's bride, and you shall live happily together in the sludge by the pond." She smiled a smile that frightened Thumbelina, and the bubbles doubled around the young toad's eyes. As the two toads slithered off through the dark, sparkling water, Thumbelina was anything but happy. She sat all alone and oh so sad in the middle of a leaf, in the middle of a pond. She thought very hard how to escape from a horrible life with a terrible toad. As she thought, she noticed little fishes swimming in the all around her, and she called to them, "Can you help me, little fish?" And the fish, who had never liked the toads, swam down the stem of the lily pad and gnawed at it until the leaf floated free. Just then a butterfly fluttered by and lit upon her leaf. Thumbelina untied her sash and tied one end of her leaf and the other to the butterfly. So away she went, out of the pond and into a stream, out of the stream and into a river, passing towns great and small. Birds would spy her and sing out, "What a pretty girl! What a pretty girl!" All of a sudden, Thumbelina heard a frightful buzzing above her head. She looked up to see a dreadfully big June bug diving down at her. She ducked and swatted at him, but he snatched her up with two of his six spindly legs and carried her off towards a towering tree. The June bug set her down on a lofty leaf. "You are a dazzling thing, though my taste usually runs to June bugs." As he spoke, some other June bugs landed and began to look her over. Some of the young females, their antennae a-quiver, were rather waspish in their comments. "Look at that! Only two legs! And so skinny! Where are her antennae? Hideous! Simply hideous!" Thumbelina had an idea. "Oh, I am ugly! I am! And what shall I do surrounded by such beauty?" The lady Junebug's antennae pulsed with pride. Thumbelina went on, "I don't deserve to dwell amid such splendor." The male Junebug, who had snatched her up because she was so pretty, felt embarrassed. "Let her go where she pleases." Nodding to his nitpicking sisters, he dropped Thumbelina from the treetop. Down and down she tumbled, till she spread her skirt so that the wind filled it. Then she floated gently downwards towards the ground, and landed lightly on a daisy. For the whole summer, Thumbelina lived happily in the forest, listening to the sweet song of the birds and walking among the thousands of flowers that grew there. Summer passed into fall. The birds headed for their winter homes. The leaves fell from the trees. Thumbelina shivered from the cold and had to walk farther and farther for food. One day, as she searched for food, she found herself at the homestead of a field mouse. Weakly she knocked at the door, and the good-hearted old mouse opened up, saw her, and took her in immediately. It was warm inside. "Please, sir, I'm so hungry. May I have some food?" Of course," replied the mouse, and off he shuffled into the kitchen and returned with a steaming plate of barley and broth and nuts. "Oh, thank you, Mr. Mouse," said Thumbelina sweetly. "Yes, well then, stay. Stay the winter if you wish," squeaked the mouse. For the first time in many weeks, Thumbelina was happy. One day the mouse grew very excited. "My neighbor is coming for a visit. Oh, he is a fine fellow with a magnificent mansion and a splendid velvet suit. Of course, he can barely see, but he is oh so refined. A fine husband he would make." Thumbelina smiled at the mouse's tender concern, and she was curious about this visitor, but she wasn't interested just yet in finding herself a husband. The visitor arrived, and Thumbelina's heart sank. He was nothing but a mole. His velvet suit was lovely, and he was clearly very refined, but he couldn't bear the light of day, and he sneered at everything about the daylight, at flowers and streams, at singing birds and green, green grass. "Humph," he snorted. "Give me a deep, dark room any time." The mole, although he could not see her, fell in love, but being a prudent mole, he said nothing. He did, however, invite Thumbelina to visit him in his magnificent underground mansion. The mole led Thumbelina and the field mouse through the tunnels towards his mansion. As they rounded a bend, the mole announced, "Do not be concerned, my dear, about this infernal bird," and he kicked a poor dead swallow lying there. "I'm glad I'm not a bird," snuffed the mole. "All that chirp, chirp, chirping, and when winter comes, they are too stupid to stay alive." Thumbelina remained silent, for she loved birds. As the others pressed on towards the mole's mansion, she lifted the bird's frigid feathers and kissed the poor dead creature on its closed eyes. "Perhaps," she said, "it was you who sang so sweetly for me this summer." "Poor dear bird, you made me happy, and now you are so cold." She laid her head on the bird's breast, but trembled as she felt a stirring. His heart was beating. The bird was only numb, and Thumbelina's warmth had thawed him. The bird awoke, but was too weak to move. Thumbelina gave him some crumbs she had to help him grow stronger. "A thousand thanks to you. With your help, I shall soon be well enough to fly again in the summer sunshine." And so the winter passed, with Thumbelina nursing the swallow back to health, and with each day she and the bird grew fonder of each other. But she never mentioned him to the mouse or the mole. Before too long, spring returned and the earth warmed, and the swallow told Thumbelina it was time again for him to fly. The swallow tried his wings, soaring off in a circle high above the tiny girl. He lit again beside her and asked, "Won't you come away with me and live in the deep green forest?" "No," she answered, "I cannot. I must stay with the mouse." "Then farewell. But for you, I would be under the ground, not soaring above it. Though you are small, your heart is great." And with that, the swallow took off and flew straight up into the bright sunshine. Far below, Thumbelina watched through her tears as her truest friend grew smaller and smaller and disappeared into the forest. When she returned home, the field mouse was even more agitated than usual. "Oh, my," squeaked the mouse, "it's happened, it's happened. Mr. Mole asked for your hand in marriage." "Well," thought Thumbelina, "he didn't ask me." But to the mouse, all she said was, "Oh." "You are like a daughter to me, my dear. I have employed 4 of the best spinners in the field to work on your trousseau." Thumbelina smiled at the mouse's kindness, but her heart sank with double sadness. To be separated from her truest friend, and to be doomed to a life of darkness with the mole. Every day she would leave the spinning spiders and go out to breathe in the fragrance of her beloved flowers, and she would gaze up through the blades of grass at the deep blue sky. How she treasured those times, for she knew that with the mole she would never see the sun, never smell the flowers, and all the while she would scan the sky for the swallow and listen for his song. But the swallow did not come. Every evening the mole would call on her with great formality. Never did he fail to say how he longed for the summer to end. "When it is gone and the dark days are with us again, you and I will be wed." And each time he said that, Thumbelina's heart sank deeper. All too soon, you can be sure, summer came to an end. The scent of flowers grew dimmer, and the sky was dark more than it was light. "Your wedding is just a week away," exclaimed the mouse as he bustled about with the guest list. Thumbelina could contain herself no longer. She drew herself up to her full 2 inches and declared, "I will never marry that dreadful, dark-abiding, mean-mouthed, monstrous old mole." The mouse dropped his guest list and his jaw. "I will not," she repeated. "Rubbish," shrieked the mouse. "You should be grateful. Besides, how could I ever explain? Imagine, just imagine." And with that, the mouse turned and walked away. The wedding would take place. That much was certain. The day before the wedding, Thumbelina walked sadly through the grass for one final look at the sky. She felt the warmth of the sun on her face, and closing her eyes, she thought she could hear the chirping sound of the swallow. Thumbelina smiled at the memory. "I shall never again see you, my truest friend." And in her mind, she heard again the swallow's song. "I must not torment myself," she said aloud. "Then come away with me," said the swallow. It was the swallow sitting next to her. Thumbelina told her friend of the life that she would lead without sun, without birds, without trees, and without flowers, her beloved flowers. "I'm headed towards sunny, peaceful lands where the flowers always bloom," said the swallow. "You must let me carry you there." Thumbelina needed no convincing. She leapt onto the swallow's back and put her feet on his outspread wings. Up they went, climbing over trees and then swooping down along golden meadows, across silvery lakes, through shimmering valleys. Thumbelina shivered as she soared over snow-topped mountains, but she snuggled under the swallow's warm downy feathers. On they went, and soon they were in the sunny countries. Beneath them, Thumbelina saw a magnificent lake. On one side of the lake rose a white marble palace with tall, graceful columns. Atop each column perched a nest, and it was to one of these that the swallow headed, Thumbelina on his back. "What a beautiful home you have, but it's so high. Is there nowhere below where I might stay?" "You gave me back my life," answered the bird. "I shall give you the happiness you have earned. Choose any flower, and it will be your home." The swallow gathered her up and swooped down to hover above the flowers. Thumbelina noticed that inside each flower stood a tiny person, no taller than herself. "But who are they?" she asked. "They are the flower angels," explained the swallow. "In each flower lives a tiny angel, and they are very like you." Thumbelina was about to speak when she spotted one tiny angel, radiantly handsome and more magnificent than the rest. On his shoulders was a pair of splendid white wings, and on his head was a graceful golden crown, the King of the Flower Angels. The king stood transfixed at the sight of Thumbelina. "How utterly beguiling," thought the king. "She is the most beautiful girl I have ever seen." And truly she was. As Thumbelina stepped onto his flower, the king removed his crown and bowed. Thumbelina bowed as she returned the king's gesture. "How wonderful," she thought. "I wish I might be married to someone as remarkable as this king of my own size." The king, it should come as no surprise, was having very similar thoughts, and it was not very many days before the king placed his crown on Thumbelina's head. They were married, accompanied by the song of the swallow, who was pleased that at last Thumbelina had found contentment. The flower angels showered her with gifts, but the greatest of these was from the king, a pair of white gossamer wings, and she was very, very happy. When spring came, the swallow bade farewell and soared off into the north for a few months, and there he built his nest over the window of a cobbler's shop and told the cobbler this story, and the cobbler has passed it on to us. The end.
Thumbelina was very popular.
That's what happens when you're beautiful.
Such a burden.
However, my grandmother always said, beauty is as beauty does.
This is right. This is right. So Thumbelina had it all.
Mm-hmm.
The song at the start was Tooralooralooray by Colin Ray, and you're joining KSJD Dryland Community Radio 90.5 and 91.5 FM, and Miss Barbara's going to wrap it up with another story.
And I'm going to apologize a little bit ahead of time because I may get my tongue tied on this. This is The Seven Chinese Sisters, written by Kathy Tucker, illustrated by Grace Lynn, published by Albert Whitman and Company. Once upon a time, there were seven Chinese sisters who lived together and took care of each other. And each sister had shining black hair and sparkling eyes. Each stood straight and tall, except for seventh sister, who was just a baby. But the sisters were very different. First sister could ride a scooter fast as the wind. Second sister knew karate. Kick, chop, hi-ya! Third sister could count to 500 and beyond. Fourth sister could talk to dogs. Fifth sister could catch any ball, no matter how fast and high it was thrown. Sixth sister could cook the most delicious noodle soup in the world. And seventh sister? No one really was sure yet what she could do, as she was so little, she had never spoken even one word. Far across the bridge, through a forest and up a mountain, lived a terrible dragon. One day he woke up very hungry. He took a big sniff, 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 and smelled something wonderful. It was six sisters' noodle soup. Down the mountain, over the forest, and across the bridge flew the dragon straight to the seven sisters' house. The sisters were so busy they didn't see him coming. First sister was polishing her scooter. Second sister was practicing for her black belt. Third sister was counting grains of rice. Fourth sister was talking to a stray beagle. fifth sister was throwing a ball up a mile or so and catching it. Sixth sister had just stepped into the pantry to get some more noodles. And seventh sister was crawling around on the kitchen floor. When the dragon peeked in the kitchen door and saw plump little seventh sister, he forgot all about the soup. Instead, he snatched up the baby. Then he flew back over the bridge and forest, up the mountain, and into his cave. But as soon as the dragon set the seventh sister down, he was just going to get some salt, she said her very first word, and it was an excellent word. It was, "Help!" The six sisters had just started to look for seventh sister when they heard her call, and right away they knew her voice. "Seventh sister is in trouble," cried first sister, leaping on her scooter. "We must save her." The other sisters hung on behind, pulled by first sister, who was strong as well as fast. The sisters sped across the bridge. Beyond was the deep forest filled with many trees, so many that third sister counted them by twos. Now seventh sister's cries were louder, and the sisters headed up the mountain and soon reached the dragon's cave. "Help! Help! Help!" They could smell smoke and heard the most awful roars. Fourth sister listened carefully. Dragons do not talk exactly like dogs, but she still could understand a little. The dragon was roaring, "There is no use calling for help. You're going to be my supper." And suddenly, seventh sister shouted her second word ever, which was, "No! If you don't bring her out, sir, you will regret it," called fourth sister in the best dog language she could manage. The dragon stopped roaring. What was that girl yelling? All he could understand was, "Bring her out, sir." But no one had ever tried to talk to him before, and he was so curious, he picked up seventh sister and rushed outside. Second sister stepped forward, then fast as lightning, she leaped into the air and slapped the dragon on the chin and shouted, "Hi-ya!" The dragon was so surprised that, whoop, seventh sister flew out of his mouth. Back, back, back ran fifth sister. Back, 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 and reaching up, 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 she caught seventh sister neatly, like a fly ball. When the dragon saw that his dinner was gone, he fell to the ground sobbing. "Hungry, hungry," he whimpered. And fourth sister understood him perfectly, because the word hungry is exactly the same for dragons as it is for dogs. "He's starving," she explained, and now all the sisters could see he was quite skinny and sort of sad. "Tomorrow, sixth sister can bring him some soup," first sister said, "but we've got to get seventh sister home. She's all worn out, and she needs her diaper changed." "Sisters, go home," cried seventh sister, who was learning to talk very quickly now. First sister put seventh sister on her back and hopped on her scooter. The other sisters hung on behind, and they whizzed fast as the wind down the mountain. But when they reached the forest, first sister stopped. Now that they didn't have seventh sister's cries to guide them, how could they find their way through all these trees? "Don't worry," said third sister. "I counted the trees when we came. We must go past 500. And so, when third sister had counted 500 trees by twos, the seven sisters came to the bridge. They scooted across and back to their house, where they had a wonderful meal of six sisters' delicious noodle soup. And what did seventh sister do when she grew tall? She became the best storyteller in the world, and she always told this story first. The end.
I really thought they were going to go back and feed the dragon.
Well, you assume that they did, but...
Like, poor, what about the poor old skinny guy?
Poor old skinny dragon, yeah. Was hungry.
He's left to eating children, and that's not good.
No.
Instead of that delicious soup. You can join us at the library every Thursday at 10:30 in the morning, and every Saturday at the Cortez Farmers Market at 10:30 for our story times. And also, please join us here again, 3:30 every Sunday on KSJD, Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM. And it is not too late to pick up a reading log. We encourage this, especially during the summer months, so you don't lose your reading skills and you don't think 3 months is a long time, but it is.
It is.
From one grade to another. Mm-hmm. And that will go on until August 19th. And we're all done with our family entertainment programs. We hope that you enjoyed those. And another, what, month? Oh, couple of weeks of reading now. And then school does begin.
School is here.
Yeah. And please come into the library, get a library card, avail yourself of our resources. And I don't know if Miss Barbara had anything to say.
Well, I just want to remind you again that we do have lots and lots of books on every single topic you can imagine. So if there's something special that you want to read about, some story you would like to hear, no matter what it is, come in, ask one of the librarians. They'd be glad to help you find it.
Yes. And summer did go by quickly, but throughout the rest of the school year, we encourage you to come in and still freshen your reading skills. It's well worth it.
Yes, and unfortunately, the reading in Cortez has not gotten to be very good compared to the rest of the state, so we need to really get our reading scores up.
Yes. Okay, here we go with Turaluraluri by Colin Ray. Thank you for joining us.